On today's episode of the Culture Vacuum Podcast, we talk about the group trying to sabotage Black Panther, and Michael catches up on the Oscar movies. So sit back, relax, and get sucked in. Episode 14 of the Culture Vacuum Podcast. I am your host, Samuel Paulet, and back with us again, my co-host, Michael Watts.
How's it going, everybody? It's me, Mickey D.
He's back. He's better than ever.
What's going on? I missed you guys.
Michael, yeah?
It was just a week, but I missed you.
You know, we all missed you, buddy. I had to go through all those Oscar nominations by myself, and I don't think I said anything interesting.
Well, I mean, you know, it is what it is, Samuel. It's all water under the bridge now.
True that.
What's been going on, Samuel? We got some news.
Yeah, so before we go into movie news, there's some world news I think we need to break. I've been sitting on this story for a while, but I've done the requisite research, and I think we need to come out and say this finally so that the world knows the truth, that someone that you and I have known for a very long time, that we are very good friends with, is actually a clone.
Oh, crap. Who is it? This is awful news.
Our dear friend Will Hodgdon is a clone in an orphan black like conspiracy. You see,
wow.
When the new season of Black Mirror aired, the guy who plays the male lead in one of the episodes, episode 4, Hang the DJ, he looks quite a bit like our buddy Will Hodgdon, and he's actually the same actor who played John in Peaky Blinders. And it turns out when that guy grows his hair out, he looks exactly like our friend Will Hodgdon.
Oh wow.
And I was like, oh, wow, that's a fun coincidence. This actor looks just like our friend. What a goofy time.
How fun.
How fun and innocent.
What a coincidence, but coincidence it was not.
Yes, for about 2 weeks later, I started doing some research because, you know, we talked a few episodes back. I wanted to buy some Ultra Boosts, right?
Right.
I did some research on some Ultra Boosts, and I found one YouTuber, very good YouTuber. He has the best sneaker explaining channel named Seth Fowler. Turns out Seth Fowler also looks exactly like our friend Will Hodgdon.
Oh my God.
So that's when I decided to make you and Will aware of this.
Right. I think it's important that not only I, but the person who is the clone should know that he's a clone, probably.
Yeah. Yes. So I was like, wow, that's really. And then this is when I knew for a fact this was a conspiracy. I don't know what the conspiracy is about or why, but I know it's real because I was watching a different YouTube channel. This time a man named John Campia. He's a movie guy. And he has a show where people can send in videos of themselves asking questions and he'll respond. And one of the video questions sent in was by a different guy, a fourth guy who looks exactly like our friend Will Hodgdon.
Oh, no.
That's four people now.
That's four clones in total.
That's four clones. At least four clones.
Wow.
I don't know why there are so many clones of Will. I don't know who the first clone is. I just know our best friend is a clone.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Well,
and we don't know how deep this goes.
Well, we have to be careful who hears this, because if they find out that we figured it out, we could be in some quite some danger, Samuel.
Exactly. I haven't seen any episode. I've only seen the first episode of Orphan Black, but you know, I bet something doesn't good happen.
I've seen zero, so you have more prep against these forces than I do.
And you know who? But you know who has seen a lot of Orphan Black?
Will Hodge.
Will Hodge has seen Orphan Black.
He's ready then.
He knows what to do when his clones. I think the clones team up with each other.
Oh, so we're fucked, or unless Will convinces the other clones that we're all right, you know.
Oh, you and I are like, we're the goofy side characters, you know?
Right. Yeah.
We have a B plot going on.
Okay. Cool.
So I think we're
fine.
That
still gives us a risk of dying, you know. So
Yeah, side characters get killed off all the time.
So we'll just have to be careful and hope that Will can protect us enough, you know.
Yeah, so watch this space. Nothing is real. Don't trust anyone. But our best
Will
friend
is
a clone. Anything Damn. Could happen from now.
Anything is possible.
Yeah, but we got some news in the world of movies.
Oh boy. No more clone news. We're on to the movie news now.
Movie news, baby. Okay, so a few little small stories, and then I got two big stories that we're gonna get through. Let's do trailers. I don't want this to be a trailer reaction channel. You know, I like to talk about some trailers when they come out.
Yeah.
The first teaser for Ant-Man and the Wasp.
That fun Pez dispenser action.
Yep, Hello Kitty Pez dispenser action, so that they can appeal to Chinese audiences. Yeah, they got we got a bunch of big shrinking and growing
wings. You gave her wings.
We got wings. They're gonna do some more crimes. We don't know what the movie's about. I just say like, hey, Ant-Man and the Wasp is coming around the bend.
You remember Ant-Man? Well, he's still kicking and screaming and doing stuff, and but now he's got a sidekick. So get ready,
Michael. It's a partner, not a sidekick.
My bad. No offense to the Wasp.
It's the 21st century. Women can be superheroes too.
Women can. Women aren't always sidekicks.
That's that. I'm looking forward to it. You know, we saw the Ghost. Yeah. The Ghost is the villain, and his whole thing is like he's a. I think the Ghost is a woman in this movie. See? Progressive. But the Ghost, their thing is they phase through walls to do corporate espionage. The most exciting thing in the world. Corporate espionage.
That's Ant-Man's forte, dealing with corporate espionage.
That really is what the first movie is. It's just like, hey, really let's steal some trade secrets.
let's do some stuff where we gotta, you know, put this business down.
If only they brought Mr. Billy Business.
It's the stakes that are appropriate to the size of the superhero. I would
tiny
say.
Hero, tiny stakes, corporate exactly. espionage. Hey, let's go do some corporate espionage to stop this guy from selling some weapons.
Send in the little guy to deal with the little problem.
Yeah. Okay, so that's
nice. Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Yeah, I'll say this about the first Ant-Man. I liked it more than Avengers 2.
Okay, that's fair. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's like Ant-Man is like a... I don't know, I feel like every superhero, like, you know, every comic book group, I guess, has their own sort of, like, joke character. And I feel like Ant-Man's a bit of the joke character for Marvel, you know? But
yeah,
I enjoyed the movie. Like, yeah,
originally,
you know.
Ant-Man was hardcore, though. Like, he had multiple personality disorders. Famously, in the comics, he beat his wife. Like, there's a lot of heavy shit
heavy
that goes
shit.
On in Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn.
But this time, it's Paul Rudd.
But
who doesn't love
now,
Paul
now
Rudd?
It's Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd can't beat a woman on screen.
Yeah,
that,
it's
that
not, he doesn't
believable.
Have it in him.
It's just Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
He's just shrinking and growing and... doing corporate espionage.
Corporate espionage. Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
The only thing sexier than corporate espionage is tax policy. Oh, yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Gotta love me some tax policy in my superhero movies. Thank you.
We negotiate with the Trade Federation.
Gotta set up some tariffs.
Yeah. Impose some sanctions.
Just the good stuff, you know.
It's
the
tight.
Stuff that arguably audiences want.
Speaking of things that every audience wants, Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks has been cast as Mr. Rogers in the Mr. Rogers movie. Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Who doesn't know Mr. Rogers, you know?
I think he's a global celebrity. He's definitely A-list.
Like, Mr. Rogers was Oprah before Oprah.
That's very true. I mean, Mr. You know? Rogers was Oprah before we even knew who Oprah was.
I can't remember a single episode of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. I just remember him being so pleasant, you know?
I can't remember a plot line, but I can remember, like, vague, you know, like, themes and stuff that would happen, because we had the puppets, right? And
yeah.
So that was nice.
Yeah, there's a storyline with all the puppets, but, like, with Mr. Rogers, all I remember, I don't remember if he ever taught me anything, I just remember he was just a swell guy, you know? Yeah, he puts on his cardigan, he swaps out a sweater for a different sweater, swaps out his shoes for a different set of shoes. The one thing I do remember about Mr. Rogers is the episode that he was on Arthur.
Oh, wait, like the Arthur, like, every day where you're walking down the street, Arthur?
Yeah.
That Arthur?
Yeah, yeah, Mr. Hard Rogers was on an episode of Arthur. The plot of that episode was Mr. Rogers was coming to speak to Arthur's school, and for some reason, instead of staying in a hotel, he stayed in Arthur's house. And everyone made fun of Arthur for having, specifically Binky. Binky's like, you have Mr. Rogers staying in your house, you dweeb.
You but at the loser. End of the episode,
but in the most Mr. Rogers moment of all time, at the end of the episode, Mr. Rogers shows up to the school, walks right up to Binky, and Binky's like, can I have your autograph?
We realize that Mr. Rogers is actually a cool guy.
Mr. Rogers is dope.
Mr. Rogers was in a fraternity in college. I just like envisioning Mr. Rogers in frat scenarios. Just like,
oh, hey,
yo,
there,
Roger.
Neighbor.
Yo, Roger, come on over here and slam this PBR.
Oh, well, I sure would like to.
I sure would love to do that. I'll just come on over here and oh, it's just a beautiful name. It's a beautiful day in the frat house, isn't it, brother?
It's great here being here in Tep. Like, yeah. Like he was the one. He was the first woke guy in frats, and like instead of you know doing what fraternity brothers do to women, that he was like,
the beginning of PC bro culture.
Yeah, that's why Mr. Rogers got so much puss in college, because he was so woke. Yeah,
he started it. He started it all.
So thank Tom you, Hanks Mr. is Rogers. Playing Mr. Rogers.
Yay. That's okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Plot of the movie is that this journalist is, he's like a serious journalist, and he's assigned to do a profile on Mr. Rogers. And he shows up thinking, oh, this guy, a children's entertainer. Who's this guy? And then he meets Mr. Rogers, and Mr. Rogers is, you know,
Mr. Rogers. Yeah.
And the journalist's whole perspective on life changes because Mr. Rogers is so angrily nice.
Wow.
Yeah. But that'll be
that's cool.
I don't know.
That'll be fun.
The movie could suck, but I'm glad that more people are gonna see the story. Does your sister watch Mr. Rogers reruns on PBS or whatever?
I don't think so. I don't even think she knows who he is, which is a shame. I'll have to talk to Cammy about that one.
Yeah, because I know like after he died, they kept rerunning old Mr. Rogers episodes because there's hundreds of them.
Right. Yeah. I mean, they made tons of them. He was on for like 20 years. They should still be doing reruns on PBS. I would think so. I mean, Mr. Rogers deserves it, honestly.
Mr. Rogers is timeless. His message is be kind to people.
Yeah.
So that's that story. Little story there for you.
Little Tom Hanks story. Mr. Rogers story.
Yeah. No, Michael, the other thing we'd be remiss to not talk about is this AMC and MoviePass.
Oh yeah, what's going on? Didn't we talk about this already?
Well, we talked about it a little bit, but I said in our first MoviePass discussion that MoviePass, I think the issue is like if MoviePass shuts down, those million customers they have are gonna no longer value movies the same way.
Right.
And they may not go to the movies anymore. And AMC actually had that same fear. Both sides have been flawed here. What MoviePass did was they wanted, I believe, a certain cut of ticket sales and a cut of concessions from AMC because they said, oh, our million customers give you so much money, you should give it to us. MoviePass said, hey, give us a cut of money. AMC said, no, stop being stupid. So MoviePass said, okay, then we're not going to let our customers go to 25 of your most popular theaters. Mm-hmm. So the big AMC in Boston, the big AMC in New York, the Empire 25, none of those theaters work with MoviePass anymore.
No longer. AMC, all the AMC Empire are no longer there.
Yeah. And then
we still get lows though, which is interesting. Yeah.
But at the same time, the way AMC is firing back is if you're a Stubbs member, which I am, because the way Stubbs works is for every dollar you spend, you get points. And then I think every $100 or something, you get a $5 voucher credit for food or whatever.
Right.
What AMC did was they said, oh, if you buy a ticket with MoviePass, you can't use your Stubbs account. Which I understand AMC being mad at MoviePass, but it's still stupid for them not to give me my Stubbs points when they still get the full price of their ticket from MoviePass.
Right. How do they enforce that? For me, because, I mean, MoviePass doesn't allow, like, I don't get any e-ticket MoviePass theaters up here. It's all in person, so I have to be, like, at the theater. So if I just buy a ticket normally, are they going to, like, look at my MoviePass card and be like, oh, nope, sorry, you can't use that here. But then at the same time, what if I'm at a kiosk?
Okay, so the way it works is some people, they at the theater, you can still use MoviePass, you just can't use your Stubbs cards to redeem points off that ticket purchase. And the way they enforce it is most people actually have a physical card for their Stubbs membership. I don't. I have an e-card on my phone that the kiosk scans. So what happens is people have been just like going on Twitter, and if they like they go to the kiosk, they use their MoviePass, and then there'd just be someone lurking around the kiosk for AMC saying, hey, you can't use your Stubbs card, or we're gonna cut your Stubbs card.
What?
If you use your movie. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the AMC Gestapo.
Yeah, that's how they're enforcing it. Because the thing is, the way MoviePass works is they have a deal with MasterCard. So AMC can't block a MoviePass card and Stubbs because the computer is only reading it as a regular credit card. This thing, it's beyond stupid and petty.
It's really childish, but, like,
yeah. Like, and MoviePass,
we're gonna put a guy and he's gonna make sure you can't use your Stubbs card.
And we can't pretend that MoviePass is also innocent, because when they said, oh, we're taking 25 AMC theaters off our service, they responded saying, AMC has to negotiate with us because we represent this much of their income. And then The Verge, one of my favorite websites, they actually broke down the numbers that MoviePass provided and said, no, you don't make up, you're not that important to AMC.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's very childish, in my opinion, though, just the whole thing. Like, it's I don't see the big deal with it, I guess, you know? Like, they're definitely getting more people to go and see movies, you know, with this app, you know? Why can't AMC just be happy?
It's not that they can't just be happy, though. Like, AMC didn't ask for MoviePass, because since MoviePass is just a credit card, the card works where every MoviePass will let it work. Like, at a premium theater, AMC doesn't block MoviePass from buying 3D tickets. MoviePass made the business decision to not fork the money for a 3D movie ticket.
Right.
MoviePass can let these cards work at any theater in the entire world. The theaters have no say in it. And that's why it's so hard to fight. But I think it just goes to show that the theater chains need to get their shit together, realize, oh, movie tickets are too expensive, and find some way to duplicate the ticketing programs they have in the UK. Because the UK, as far as I know, the UK has movie programs almost identical to MoviePass, which some more benefits, but they're owned by the theaters instead of another company. If the theaters don't want to fight with MoviePass, and they want to keep people coming to the theaters, they have to lower the price of tickets. And one of the ways you do that is you do subscription plans that give people a value to come to the theater.
Right.
Like, if AMC really wants to stop MoviePass, copy MoviePass.
Yeah. Make a better one.
Yeah. Like, they already have, I believe the thing in the UK is you get, not only do you get unlimited movies, but you also get discounts on concessions or something like that.
Okay, that's nice.
Like, they're pretty good programs, and they're really worth getting if you're a movie fan in the UK. I wish that like AMC, Regal, all these theater chains, if they really don't like MoviePass this much, they need to just copy their business model, because that will destroy them.
Oh, yeah.
And then you can control your cash flow. The last big story before we do our main thing today. So Black Panther. There's two parts of the story. The first one is Black Panther had its premiere on Monday, last Monday, so the week before you're hearing this, And all the early reactions are ranging from pretty good to amazing. There hasn't been one bad review coming out of this premiere.
Wow.
So, and like I've checked critics who've been pretty critical of Marvel. Like, the worst thing I found is, like, you know, it's an above-average Marvel movie. And that's great, because Thor Ragnarok was an above-average Marvel movie. Civil War, an above-average Marvel movie. Like, if it's in that range, if the minimum is that it's one of the better, it's on the higher end of that Marvel bell curve, I'm excited.
Right.
So naturally, this has drummed up a lot of buzz. It's now tracking to hit $120 million opening weekend. I think it could go above that. I think it can beat Deadpool's record of $137 million for, like, Deadpool holds the record for top opening weekend for the first film of a superhero. I think Black Panther can beat that.
I think if anybody can, it would be them. I mean,
yeah.
Deadpool was pretty hyped up, but not to the level that Black Panther was.
I think Black Panther hype is comparable to Deadpool, but if I had to put my money down now, I would say $140+ million opening weekend. There are some people saying 150. I don't know about that. That 150, that's lofty for almost any movie to hit. But yeah. I think 140 is what to aim for. 150 is certainly possible, but I think it's going to beat Deadpool. I got my ticket for opening night.
I don't. Me and Pat are going to go and get there early and try to movie past it, see if that works.
You may have trouble, but I wish you the best of luck.
Yeah, we're gonna see, and then if it doesn't work out, we'll just go the next day or whatever.
Yeah, do like a matinee or something.
Yeah.
You'll be able to see it. It's a very popular movie.
Oh, yeah. No, here's the thing is, like, this is something I've realized because this week I spent a lot of time going to movies. Nobody goes to movies in New York. Like, nobody goes to movies. Every theater that I was in this week was less than half full.
I think that's more of just it's January, so there aren't that many movies that are huge draws to the theater.
Yeah. The biggest crowd I had was when I saw Three Billboards.
Makes sense. And
it was like, there was maybe like 20 people in there.
I think like New York, that type of, like, there's certainly the art house audience. Were you going to art house theaters or mainstream theaters?
The only art house one that I went to was for Three Billboards. And that was at a theater called Cinema Village East on 12th Street. And that one was, like, very art house, very small theater. But that was the biggest crowd I had. So,
yeah.
It was interesting.
I think it's the season. I don't know about the size of the movie, but, like, the fact New York has so many massive theaters. And, you know, Manhattan real estate, not the cheapest thing in the world.
Not at all, no.
So, obviously, these massive theaters have some market to serve.
Yeah. And then you have places like the Regal Ewok Stadium in Times Square, which is a monstrosity of a theater. It's like me and Pat, we went and saw Jumanji yesterday, and we went and saw it there. And
what'd you think
God
of Jumanji?
Almighty, Jumanji was all right. It was a solid five. I had a discord with my roommate because he wanted to argue that it was the same, if not better, as Thor Ragnarok, and I strongly disagreed with him there. Just, like, on the writing alone, and the fact that, like, Thor had, like, any sort of, like, artistic, you know, drive and thematic elements, you know?
Yeah, like, the best part of Jumanji was Jack Black playing a teenage girl trapped in Jack Black's body.
Definitely. Yeah. That was 100% the funniest part of the movie. And the cake bit with Kevin Hart.
Yeah. But, Thor Ragnarok, it's not the best Marvel movie. But
no.
I think your roommate's argument, if I had to guess, is like they're both run-of-the-mill generic plot lines turned into comedies.
Yeah.
The difference is, though, that Thor Ragnarok did its job better than Jumanji.
Right.
Thor Ragnarok is a better generic plot turned into a comedy than Jumanji is.
But yeah, I enjoyed it, you know.
Yeah, it's fine.
Wasn't anything special, but wasn't bad.
It's killing in the box office, though. Like, it is a...
Yeah, it's, like, been number one for 4 weeks or something, right?
Yeah, and it's outgrossed Justice League.
Wow, shocker.
Yep. Yeah. I think it knocked Justice League off the top 10 list of the year or something domestic
Okay. Good
in
for
terms
good.
of box
That
office.
that's what we needed, honestly. Thank
Yeah.
you to Jumanji for doing that. Just coming in and just knocking it off.
Yeah. Yeah, made yeah, it's made more money than Justice League. Jumanji's not a good movie. Like, I don't know why people love it so much. It's fine, you know?
Yeah. I mean it's one it's the perfect example of a movie that just gives audiences what they want.
The second half of the story, though, is okay. So after all this hype for Black Panther came out, this Facebook group popped up,
Okay.
and they claim what their big claim was, they don't like Disney.
Okay.
They don't like Disney's business practices. They don't like anything about Disney. They
That's it.
claim that they're the group that
Moms
they
Against
was,
Disney on Facebook.
yeah. They think they claim to be the group that was responsible for The Last Jedi getting bad Rotten Tomatoes scores, and they want to do the same thing to Black Panther. At no point in
Okay.
this Facebook post did they mention the fact that it's an all black audience, that it's an SJW, whatever.
Right.
So they don't mention any of that. They just say, we don't like Disney. They sabotaged the DCEU. They did this, they did that. A bunch of BS, honestly. So what ends up happening is Facebook removes this group, this Facebook event, and then Rotten Tomatoes says we're on the outlook for Black Panther to make sure any negative criticism is legitimate. And then some people do a little bit more digging and find that maybe this group is connected to the alt-right.
Oh shit.
And you know, you and I talked a few months ago, but like I wrote the first draft of a rant about the alt-right in anticipation that they would do some campaign against Black Panther. I never published it just because it didn't turn into anything, but like this is the kind of thing I saw coming. When I lived in Israel, my roommate was like basically a Nazi, you know, like an alt-right
Okay.
4chan red pill kind of person.
Right. The good
And
old, you know.
I still maintain I don't want to get super political, but like the reason I maintain contact with this person is because like I think it's important. The best way to understand your enemy is to actually talk to them.
Right.
And the main dialogue in the alt-right, and this the things I'm about to say are very racist and hurtful. I am just repeating the things I know about them that I have been told by members of the alt-right. I completely disagree with everything I'm about to say. But the thing that they say is that due to genetic inferiority, that is why black people are not as wealthy, are not as successful, are not as good at inventing or whatever than the Western European world. Black Panther, if you know anything about Black Panther, stands in contrast to that entire dialogue because it shows a futuristic, hyper-advanced, African-only society.
The alt-right's worst nightmare, one could argue.
Exactly. And it has a, and that is why I anticipated that the alt-right was going to try to do something to sabotage Black Panther. I don't know if they were going to get violent, if they were going to do a troll campaign, but this is the kind of thing I saw coming, that they put on the guise of butthurt neckbeard DC fanboy who hates Marvel
Right.
so that they can get this dialogue of they don't like the fact that, God forbid, every superhero movie last year starred a white person.
Yeah.
How dare one movie star black
How dare
people?
we give one to them, you know?
Yeah, how dare they get one?
Why do, they don't need it.
Yeah, it's a it's
They've
an
got they've got all
SJW
the they've
agenda.
got all
Yeah.
the sports people. Why do they have to have the superheroes too?
Yep. So
Oh.
this
Nonsense.
is sad. This is going up about a week before Black Panther, a week or a little more than a week before Black Panther is going to premiere. But I just want everyone to listen to this and to understand that this is just the beginning. There's going
Yeah.
to, if you go to a Black Panther screening opening night, odds are there might be some Nazis protesting it. As horrible as this is to say, I would not be surprised if there's any violence around this movie,
For sure.
which sucks. Because fundamentally, it's a stupid superhero movie. that we right. just want to go out
it
and have fun with.
It doesn't mean anything. It has no effect on the world whatsoever. Well, that's not true. But
like,
it's meant to be enjoyed and meant to, you know, be a good time. And we have these goddamn fucking alt-righters coming in and ruining it.
And yes, this movie is very important to a specific subset of the population.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand and appreciate that, but fundamentally it is still a fun superhero movie. And yes, it is serving an underserved segment of the population. But that doesn't mean that it's somehow anti your segment of the population. No, it's just like, again, you look at all the top, every superhero movie that's been released in the last decade, they've all starred white people, and all but one of them have starred women. All but one of them have starred men.
Yeah.
There's, you can't argue there's an SJW agenda when overwhelmingly every superhero movie stars white men.
Right.
So God forbid someone wants to take a risk and make a movie that stars not a white man.
It's essentially the All Lives Matter argument, but for superheroes.
Yeah, but...
you know? Because you have Black Panther coming in and being like, look, Black Lives Matter. Don't you want to know about this guy's life? And yeah. Everyone's like, well, I want to know about everybody's life. Shouldn't we want to know about everybody's life? I want to know about it. Like, you know? It's really dumb, and it just doesn't make any sense. It's like, no, we're not saying that. We're not saying that the other characters don't matter. We're just saying that for this story, we want to look at this one, and that's okay.
Was Ant-Man anti-Avengers because the Avengers weren't an Ant-Man?
All superheroes matter, Samuel. Every movie should have every single superhero in it.
This is the kind of stuff that makes me angry because I had this interaction with this alt-right person. I can't just laugh it away. No, like, this is serious.
Right.
The fact that people would be so offended about a movie coming out that there's always something more to this. So it's something we all need to be vigilant of. I'm going to go see Black Panther, and if I don't like Black Panther, I will say so.
Right.
Like, it's I'm not going to like them. Like, yes, Wonder Woman was very important because it was the first female superhero movie with this side of the budget. Like, yes. But the movie Wonder Woman, aside from the fact where it went full Snyder at the end, very good movie.
Right.
You put a man in that role, still a very good movie.
For sure.
And just because there was a woman in the role doesn't excuse the fact that it went full Snyder at the end. I'll call it like I see it, but I'm very excited for Black Panther. Not just because of the fact that Black America is the most excited for this movie. I'm excited for it because I like the director behind it. I like the lead actor. The marketing has been great for it. Like, I'm excited for this movie for all the reasons that pasty white guy should be excited for it.
Exactly. The only reasons that we can be excited for it.
Yeah.
The betterment of Black culture and Black people, and a fucking awesome movie.
Yeah, I'm going. Like, I think we should. I don't know who necessarily to ask to have on, but I think when we do review Black Panther, it would be nice to have a Black film fan be a part of that conversation, because all you and I can really speak to, honestly, is how was the movie. And while I don't think the cultural impact of a movie should affect our enjoyment of it, it's still important to talk about.
We'll see. We'll see who we can round up.
Yeah, we will see. We will try to not make our Black Panther review two white guys talk about Black Panther. And if we do, we're only going to talk about the movie because I can't speak to an experience I don't have.
Exactly.
That's that. It sucks that we had to talk about it, but we can't ignore it.
We can't. We gotta tackle the hard topics too, Samuel. Can't just tackle the good ones.
Okay, well, I think that was a semi-nuanced discussion. Okay, so here's the main thing we wanted to talk about. So, Michael, how much anime do you watch? Like, would you describe yourself?
Samuel, at the end of the day, I don't consider myself an anime fan per se, but I'm definitely somebody who recognizes and appreciates, you know, the art style and whatnot. I mean, I enjoy Attack on Titan. It's a good yeah. show. I'm a big Hayao Miyazaki fan, you know. So, you know, that's about the extent of it normally, though.
Okay, so I would describe myself like I'm a pretty I'm not like a I'm not like a weeb, you know? I
Yeah, you, I
don't
mean,
go to the
you're definitely more of a fan of it than I, or a dedicated fan to it than I am, I would
Yeah.
say. But I wouldn't
I
consider
think
you a weeb of any
I'm
sorts.
and the reason I'm not a weeb is like I just watch anime and I'm like, "Oh, that's pretty good." I
Right,
don't
it's not
do
a
like the
lifestyle
weeb
for
things like
you.
this is my waifu and the dad but no it's like if I watch a show if I like it I keep watching if I don't like it I stop watching it and that's it but the thing we're talking about today I was like I think it'd be really funny to make Michael watch this we're talking about the new this is the first anime that Netflix has paid and produced entirely on its own without licensing it from a Japanese company is Devilman Crybaby. And when I watched Devilman Crybaby, I was like, man, this is really good. As a fan of anime, I enjoy this quite a bit. Maybe I should make Michael watch this.
Yeah.
And Michael, before we get into this discussion, tell me, what was your impression from watching all 10 episodes of Devilman Crybaby?
Well, I did not watch all 10 episodes. I will say that off at the beginning.
How many have you watched?
I've seen like the first and a half of the second. So,
Okay, that's
yeah.
enough to give you the taste of this. So we'll
For
only talk
sure.
about the pilot. So, watching the end of the first episode, what are your impressions?
I mean, it was wild. I mean, here's the thing is like most anime is like, you know, pretty intense and, you know, to begin with, it's, you know, you can expect some crazy stuff, you know. But this one this one was a was interesting. This one was another level, I think.
Yeah, so
It was I
I'll
mean it was
say,
good. I enjoyed it. I
yeah.
you know, just like a lot more than what I was expecting for an anime, which is, I think, a lot to say.
Oh yeah, no, when I was like, this is the type of show like it's like the first episode of Black Mirror. You just spring it on your friends to fuck with them.
Right.
Because when I watched Devilman Crybaby, the first episode was like, oh man, the animation, the art style, oh wow. And then the end of it happened, and it was like, oh, that's why. Because if you know anything about Japan, they have very strict censorship rules.
Right.
So nudity basically can't show. Gore, you can't show. Like, so what happens is anime shows, the gore will get blacked out on screen. And then when the Blu-ray comes out, you can watch it uncensored. Makes it very hard to watch. Especially for shows like Attack on Titan or Tokyo Ghoul, which is nothing but gore. So when you watch the end of the first episode of Devilman, you see why Netflix should have made this and not a Japanese studio.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah. I mean,
Yeah.
and that's something that's important that you brought up, 'cause I didn't think about that when watching it, you know, the censorship laws and everything, but yeah, it's that's a good point, because this show is a lot of that.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't work with the Japanese censorship, you know, of just blacking it out. And
Yeah.
yeah, so that is cool, and I think that's good. I'm glad that Netflix did get another Japanese anime company, you know.
Yeah. I can recommend the whole series, but let's talk about the pilot and briefly what the show's about. So there's this guy, Akira Fudo. And he's a crybaby. He's super emotional, super empathetic. He just
Yep.
he's an all-around good guy.
He's an athlete, you know.
But he's not a great athlete, but he's an
Not a good
athlete.
one, but he gets he you know, he's the underdog per se.
And then he has his friend who's a sociopath. And when you watch the series more, you'll understand a little bit more why he's a sociopath. But I'm
Okay.
just keeping to that first episode. The show it doesn't it's not super plotty. So the way it's after the pilot, it goes into a villain of the week thing, and then at about episode 5, the plot shifts entirely.
Okay.
But the general idea is that in the real world, because of all the sin of humanity, demons are able to take over humans and turn them into monsters and killing machines. And the way they do it is like so at the it's hard to talk about without spoiling their whole thing, but at the end of this first episode, Akira and his friend go to this party, and the reason you can't show this in Japan is because at this party are just people fucking in public and doing hardcore drugs.
All types of just misandry and foul play.
And then at the end of the first episode, the Akira's friend starts straight up stabbing people.
Yep.
To increase the amount of sin. Then just left, right, and center, people just start turning into demons.
Yep.
So the gore factor gets turned up to 100, and then Akira turns into Devilman.
It's a good pilot. It definitely gets you, like, just confused enough, you know, to be like, okay, well, what the fuck just happened there? I gotta find out more about that, because that was a lot, but I think I liked it, you know?
yeah. No, like, it's a very good pilot to drop on people, because it starts out very slow, and it's like,
I think I'm gonna do it to Pat today.
Yeah, it starts off very slow, and it's like, oh, this is a cute little slice of life anime, and oh, who's this new mysterious character? And then that scene happens.
Uh-huh.
And the show just takes off from there. I will say that, like, the show itself is very, very sexual.
Right.
There's some scenes where it's one of them. It's like, there's a very graphic sex scene in a later episode that verges on the point of hentai.
Oh wow.
And it serves an artistic purpose, of course, but it's still just one of those things like, oh, again, you can't show that in Japan.
I enjoyed it. I'm excited. I'm definitely gonna you know, watch the rest
I wish you'd watch more so we could talk about the whole thing, but
we can do that another episode. I'll go and I'll watch the rest of it, and then we can do a full recap. This will be our intro to Devilman Crybaby.
Yeah, you want to do some Oscar catch up?
We can talk about the movies that I saw.
Let's do that
and stuff, you know.
Okay, the Oscar nominations dropped, and I just said, "Hey, Michael, see as many of these as you can. You have till March."
I mean, that's what I've been doing. So this week and next week, you know, while I'm waiting to hear back from jobs and applying to different places and whatnot, I'm just going to see movies pretty much every day. So
that's not much to complain about.
No, it's great. I mean, it's nice. Thanks to MoviePass, it makes it possible.
Thanks, MoviePass.
When the nominations came out, you know, I looked at them, and I was, you know, yeah, cool. I saw them, and I was like, all right. I wasn't surprised by anything for sure. I would say that my most disappointing thing was the fact that, I don't know, I just feel like Call Me By Your Name deserved a bit more credit for the technical aspect of the movie, you know? Like, it definitely got, you know, it was nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay and Best, you know, Lead Actor and Best Picture overall and everything, but I wish it would have gotten a cinematography nod and even a costuming nod as well.
The thing I'll say about cinematography is you have to look at the cinematography category and say, okay, Dunkirk or Blade Runner 2049 are probably going to win.
Right.
And even then, who of the other three do you kick out? Obviously, I'm biased because I'm hardcore rooting for Roger Deakins this year. Because I love... Because the man, not just because the lifetime achievement aspect of it, that he's been nominated 14 times and never won. Despite arguably being the best cinematography nearly every year he's nominated.
Right.
But this year, so he's competing against, okay, so who's probably, if I had to kick out one person here, I would kick out Darkest Hour.
That's the one I haven't seen yet, so.
Yeah.
I'll say, like, that's what I also plan on seeing next, though, so.
So there are parts of Darkest Hour, so if you know anything about the way British war works, is almost all British war rooms are underground in dark-lit bunkers.
Right.
So the way that the scenes where they're underground in those bunkers arguing about how to deal with Hitler and whatever, those scenes are shot very well. Like, it is very good cinematography. Mm-hmm. I haven't been able to finish Mudbound because I watched the first half hour of it, got bored, couldn't finish.
Mm.
But when I did see a Mudbound, it was shot well. So if I had to kick one out, I would kick out Darkest Hour or Mudbound for Call Me By Your Name. But even then, I don't
kick out Darkest
any...
Hour just because Mudbound is female cinematographer, and that's, like, never happened before.
So. Yes, but I think skill should come first, you know?
True, for sure. But I do think from what I've read, and I mean I haven't seen Mudbound or Darkest Hour yet, but from what I've heard, Mudbound has the cinematography is rather.
It's a very well shot movie. I just couldn't finish it. But that's on me. You know, I'm not trying to degrade the quality of the movie. It's not for me. Whatever. If it had gotten the Best Picture nod, I would have forced myself to watch it. But it just wasn't for me.
Right.
Anyway. I'm not going anything against Mudbound. I have nothing against it. Even then, I don't think any of the cinematography in Call Me By Your Name could topple Dunkirk or Blade Runner.
No, I don't think so. But I do wish that it'd gotten a nod because the cinematography was part of what made that movie so good, you know?
See, yeah.
That's, I think, where my main frustration comes from is that a lot of things made that movie really good, you know? And I don't think it got the recognition for all of them, at least in the nomination, you know.
Yeah, but I mean, there was good cinematography in what's the movie got? There was good cinematography in Star Wars. There was good cinematography in Baby Driver.
Mm-hmm.
That's the issue with five nominees. It's hard. Yeah. Even then, I was surprised it didn't get more love, but I was blown away by the amount. I'm just repeating what I said last week, but I was blown away by the amount of love that Get Out got.
Yeah. Best Picture nom, that's huge. And I don't expect it to win, but I think that it won already just by having that nomination, you know? Which is awesome. And, you know, if we can't get... Because I don't think it was the best movie of the year. But, you know, just the fact that it was nominated and gets held up there is awesome. So, yeah.
When I think back at Get Out, I was like, oh yeah, it actually is pretty good. I don't know if it's Best Picture worthy, but it's a very good movie, and obviously it hit that younger bracket of the Academy a lot more than I thought it would.
For sure.
But now let's get into the movies you saw this week.
Yeah, what I saw this week. So the first movie I saw this week was the one that I was probably at the top of my list to see, just because Samuel, you were hammering me to see it a lot. It's gotten a lot of buzz and, you know, recognition and stuff. Lady Bird. Went and saw Lady Bird and enjoyed it. I really enjoyed Lady Bird. I did the thing that I'm pretty sure most people do after seeing this movie, especially if you're in college, and especially if you're in college in New York, because I called my mom. And I was like, I love you so much. You're the best. And I can't imagine what you're going through with me being here all by myself and everything, you know. It was a really sweet movie and a very accurate and well done representation of a mother-daughter relationship. And I would venture to just say any mother-child relationship, you know.
Yeah.
And I think Saoirse Ronan and Laurie Metcalf, they both did amazing jobs portraying their characters. And yeah, the one thing I will say about this movie is there was a lot of hype about Timothée Chalamet in that movie, but like, he didn't really do much, you know?
Like, I didn't hear a lot of hype about Timothée Chalamet. It was just, I think it was
he got the nom for supporting actor and I know the Golden Globes don't matter, but he got the supporting actor nomination for that.
I don't think he did.
I think he got nominated for something.
No, he got Best Actor for Call Me By Your Name. Armie Hammer got Supporting Actor for Call Me By Your Name.
He got Best Breakout Performance at the Gotham Awards. That's what it was.
Okay.
Lady Bird.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so I was like, okay, that's fair. But I was just also like comparing it last year to Lucas Hedges in Manchester by the Sea. Like, that was like a, like, that's a breakout performance, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he did a lot Chalamet's, in that movie.
Chalamet's good in this movie, certainly, but...
Yeah. No, like, that's what I'm saying is, like, it's not that he's bad, you know? I just didn't... I don't know. I felt maybe there wasn't as much hype as I thought I was hearing, but I don't know. It seemed to me like people were talking a lot about that performance, and I don't know. It wasn't anything special to me. So
I did like the way his character, though, like, served to be a contrast to how petty some of Lady Bird's problems are.
Oh, for sure.
Like she would be ranting and just like how my mother is so restrictive. He's like, my dad is a gas tank because he's probably going to die soon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was very good at being the JD from Heathers for that movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I liked it, though. It was a good movie.
Yeah. Any other, like, favorite parts of it?
I mean, I feel like this is just I mean, any sort of movie that we get with this sort of subject material, you know, with teenagers and high school and all that stuff, we're gonna get the losing of the virginity scene, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I think that was one of the most accurate ones that I've seen, I would say,
uh-huh.
in my opinion, because it's just like, especially towards the aftermath, you know, where she realizes, you know, she's like, oh, this wasn't your first time either, and it just absolutely devastates her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that was very accurate and a very nice moment and a good moment to watch. Other standouts in the movie. I can't remember the name of the actress, but her friend.
She was great.
She was good.
Saoirse Ronan
did a great job.
There's just a lot of, like, funny moments around the fact that she's at a Christian school in this movie, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. No, like, I think that was the best part about this movie was, like, seeing all of the, like, the bullshit of... Because, like, that's the thing is, like, it was one of the first movies or high school movies that takes place at a Catholic high school that wasn't, like, making the Catholic high school out to be this, like, antagonist, you know...
Yeah.
Ultimate power that, no, they won't let us do anything. It was what actually happens at a Catholic high school, which is just kids do what they want anyways, and they just don't do them at school, and then they find ways to get around them when they're at school. You know?
I think the three best Catholic jokes in this movie are them eating the communion wafers.
Oh, yeah. That was funny.
And then she's at the dance with Danny, and they're hugging.
Seven
and
inches for the Holy Spirit.
Yep, that was great. But the best one, though, was the abortion seminar.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. That was savage. Yeah. Oh, my God. She went off on that lady. Poor lady. maybe if your mom had the abortion, we wouldn't have to sit through this bullshit right now. Fuck.
That's
something that I would, like, that would never happen at Galloway. Like, you know?
Listen,
at our high school,
there are times when I've thought of things to say
out
loud.
Okay. Well, listen, not saying, because here's the thing, you and I, we had a lot to say at assemblies and things at our high school, but we never actually went through and said them loud enough for everyone to hear. We sort of just said them loud enough for you, Will, and I to hear, you know, sitting next to each other.
We would just shoot shit. Yeah.
The most disruptive that we were was because we were laughing because of something one of us had whispered to the other. But never to the extent of telling the person that we wish they had been aborted so we didn't have to sit through the lecture.
I would have loved to have called out a specific racist person for being a racist in town hall.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
That would have been nice. That would have been great. But... You can't do that kind of thing.
No. Not at a private school, at least. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a good movie, though, overall. I enjoyed Lady Bird. I would definitely recommend going and seeing it. To add it to my list of movies for the year, I think it takes a spot under Baby Driver. I'm going to give it to the 3 spot. So, yeah, I enjoyed it. I liked it.
Nice.
But then later in the week I saw 3 Billboards outside Ebbing, Missouri, and I really enjoyed that.
What would you say you like more?
I think just because I laughed more and I don't know, I really enjoyed the script of 3 Billboards. Like, I thought they did a really good job of portraying, like, Southwest, like, you know, Missouri, like, because, I mean, Missouri is considered the South, I would say, you know. I really enjoyed the accuracy of portraying that town in a small southern town. Fun fact, actually, it was filmed near one of my roommates' hometowns in Georgia. So that's cool. But yeah, I don't know. I found more to laugh about in that movie just because I feel like I could relate more to the scenarios. Because I mean, the people like that's my family. That's my mom's side of the family, you know? And like, if my grandmother's mother had lived in modern day, she would have been
Mildred.
she would have been Mildred in this movie if she had the same circumstances. And she, Lord, she cracked me up the whole movie. Like, I was dying. Just her faces that she gave people, and just like the face performance that she gave during this movie was amazing. Like, she got more across with just by, you know, glancing her eyes to the left than by saying any of the lines that she did in the movie.
There's just there's the whole point of this movie is that, like, every single character is a terrible person,
Oh yeah,
except
for
for
sure.
Woody Harrelson. Woody Harrelson's the only good person, and he
He's the
gets
one good
cancer.
guy, and he dies.
Everyone else in this movie, Sam Rockwell, the quote-unquote heroes, like Sam Rockwell is a terrible racist person. Mildred Hayes takes matters into her own hands, gets people hurt.
Burns down. Just causes. She's honestly like my idol. She goes pure anarchist in this movie, and I love
And
it.
she's like she's not entirely justified. Like, the thing that drives her resentment over the fact that her daughter's dead is that they had a terrible falling out the last time she saw her.
Oh yeah, it's a movie full of people just doing shit because they want to, you know, not because they have motivation or ethical, you know, reasoning behind it, just because they feel like it and they're pissed off and they're gonna do it, you
Yeah,
know.
they're not. Yeah, they're not just well-developed characters. They're deeply, deeply flawed, problematic characters.
Oh yeah.
And it just like shows like, oh, this world is broken. Heroes aren't just black and white. Like, yes, is Sam Rockwell's character a terrible person because he's a racist piece of shit? Yes. But also, he does do good things. Does it
Yeah,
excuse his racism? By no means.
he redeems. It's interesting because I think this is something that we don't see in movies a lot because of, you know, the things we're talking about with, you know, people being upset about this movie and everything. Which it was a character versus self, you know, moment for sure. And the character received redemption, but not, you know, for not publicly. He received redemption for himself, you know. And I don't know, that was a nice moment to see in a movie, I think, you know, where, you know, everyone else still really hates him and doesn't really see him as a, you know, a good guy. Like, it doesn't make him a good guy doing the things he did, but he definitely feels better about himself, you know. And that's satisfying, you know, from a watching standpoint, because it's closure nonetheless, you know.
Yeah, I think like the issue that people have in this movie is that they think that Sam Rockwell's character, we're told by the movie that Sam Rockwell, by what he does, by trying to find this rapist, becomes totally redeemed. Which that's not how I read it. I see it as like he's on the path to redemption.
Right. I saw it as this was the first step in a series of many steps, you know, to redeem himself. Not that he can be redeemed, you know, for being a racist, but you know,
Yeah, like the character
it
is a
was a
racist.
form it was an inkling of redemption nonetheless. And at
And
the
I.
same time, it's like, don't get mad about a movie that people wrote, you know? Like, it's not like this person actually like Sam Rockwell's not actually a racist. Yeah. You know?
Yeah,
we're not saying that it's okay for people to be racist.
I think if people have an issue with the character that Sam Rockwell is portraying in the script getting redemption, that's fine. I can see that. I actually think, yeah, I think that is problematic that this character gets any form of redemption. It's not the kind of message you want to spread. I understand that argument.
It's fair.
It doesn't mean, though, that Sam Rockwell didn't do a good job being an actor.
No, not at all.
Sam Rockwell wasn't the guy's like, hey, what if we redeem this racist because racism isn't that bad? No, that's not what happened. He read the words in the page, listened to his director, and did a good job.
Exactly.
It's not like Casey Affleck, who, you know. Right.
Who did the things, like he was supposed to, like an actor, and then was a douchebag outside of that, you know?
Yeah, Casey Affleck wasn't a problematic case. Like, you don't give the Oscar to Casey Affleck, who, by the way, he's not going to be presenting Best Actress this year at the Oscars.
Good.
He's not. Yeah, which is good. Like, Casey Affleck was a shithead who did a good job acting.
Right.
Sam Rockwell, very, very
good guy
who
did some good acting, but played a shithead character.
Yeah. Huge difference.
Right.
But if you want to have issues, have an issue if it wins Best Screenplay, you know?
Right. Yeah.
Don't give Three Billboards Best Original Screenplay because the guy who wrote it decided to redeem a racist character and didn't do it enough to have him earn that redemption. I get that. Don't give it to that. But don't punish Sam Rockwell for that.
I enjoyed the movie. It was good. I think I enjoyed it more than Lady Bird, so that was nice. But I do think Lady Bird was the better movie. But I enjoyed Three Billboards more.
Like,
I would say,
like, rank it by enjoyment, man. You know, like if this is your three, I get it. I put Three Billboards pretty high on my list, but
yeah. I mean, I'm gonna have to go through once I finish seeing everything and, you know, completely redo the list and see where everything stands. But yeah. I don't know where quite to put it yet.
You still need to see Coco.
I do still need to see Coco. Maybe that's maybe I see Darkest Hour. I don't know, I could maybe see it today. Or
yeah, like yeah. And I need to – I think there's a few shifts. Just as time goes on, I think I enjoy Shape of Water more than Lady Bird.
Mm.
So if I had to – I would swap them, like Shape of Water, my 3, Lady Bird, my 4. But
right.
I'm still pretty confident in my list because I've also seen all the movies. I did see two movies that got completely snubbed this year.
Oh, really?
And I completely blame it on the studios that made them. So – Michael, remember that funny trailer I sent you for that movie about the hurricane heist?
I remember.
I sent you a anyway. So there's this production company called Entertainment Productions, and they were mostly a television production studio. And this year they started making actual movies. The first movie they made was Hostiles, like the first good movie they made.
Okay.
It's this Christian Bale movie it's a Western about this guy. He needs to return an Indian war chief who's responsible for the deaths of thousands of people. He has to return him to his native land so he can die peacefully. And Christian Bale gives a knockout performance in this movie. The movie, it's really good, but it didn't get any Oscar buzz because the studio didn't do a proper campaign for it.
Oh.
And the same thing goes to the other movie I saw, and I saw this last night. It was Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool.
Oh, yeah, I saw the trailer for that when I went to see Call Me By Your Name. It looks good.
It's not only a great movie, I think, why can't I remember the actor? God, Annette Bening.
Yes.
Yeah, so like not only is it a great movie, I honestly think that Annette Bening, if the studio had bothered doing an Oscar campaign for her, she not only would have been nominated for Best Actress, I think she should win. Won.
Wow.
Yeah. I looked at all the Best Actress noms. They're all good. Annette Bening gave the best performance of last year. And no one's going to see it because the studio didn't do a push for this movie. So it's just going to get swept away. And I'm actually mad about this because the job that Annette Bening does in this movie, it's like it's watching someone bat 1,000.
Right.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
Well, I'll I definitely plan on going to see it. I enjoyed the trailer when I saw it. Thought it looked interesting. So, I definitely want to see it. But that is a shame.
It's rolling out to more markets every week. But yeah, this thing, I'm so mad it got the studio didn't put enough momentum behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, just, yeah.
What can you do?
Yeah, it's sad, but go see Film Stars Don't Die in Liverpool, because if you as an actor, I think you would just love what she's doing in this thing.
I'm sure I would. And I love Jamie Bell, so.
Oh yeah, Jamie Bell is also great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Annette Bening, she is next level.
I believe it. Yeah, that's so other than that, I saw Jumanji yesterday. And that was it.
We talked enough about Jumanji.
We talked about that earlier, yeah.
It's no Proud Mary.
Yeah, it's...
I'll tell you, the biggest snub this year, I know Proud Mary came out 2018, so it would be available for next year's... I don't care. Proud Mary
should
get
the recognition now. It should get it now, honestly.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of...
Proud Mary...
What kind of time do you need to decide that this is a masterpiece?
Yeah.
She doesn't need time. She doesn't have the time. She's the mothering type, and she's gonna come in and she's gonna shoot you. Are we ready for decompression, Samuel?
Yeah, let's decompress.
Let's decompress. Wow.
We're so decompressed.
We're so decompressed right now. I feel almost no compression.
You know,
we're so.
This isn't something that really like fits in. But Michael, did you buy an Elon Musk flamethrower?
No, I didn't. I wish I had the money to, though. I would love to. Listen, I'm a firm believer in giving Elon Musk as much money as possible, just so he can keep making cool stuff. And, you know, why not give him more money and get a flamethrower at the same time, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah, I thought it was funny how he came out immediately after and was like, "Don't buy a flamethrower; it's a really stupid idea." But unless you
like fun,
unless you like fun,
yeah,
it's great because I think Elon Musk is the only person who can make something and sell it, not expecting to make any money off of it, and end up making like a reasonable amount of money off of it.
I think he raised $10 million. It's because, like, these flamethrowers, they're pretty cheap to make. Effectively, right. He just had a fundraising round and made $10 million.
Well, didn't he sell the hat? This was his awesome company or whatever, right? Something like that?
Boring Company.
Boring Company, yeah. And he sold the hats, and he said if we sold a certain amount of hats that he would make a flamethrower.
Yeah, what the Boring Company is just he wants to do a proof of concept that we need underground highways for cars, where instead of driving, your car gets on a conveyor belt and that takes you to your destination.
Interesting.
And in order to keep funding the Boring Company, since he just makes merch with Boring Company logos,
right?
So they had 40,000 hats, and he sold all the hats, and then he made 20,000 flamethrowers, and then they sold all the flamethrowers. What's next? Who knows?
It's a cool looking flamethrower. It looks like some shit out of Avatar.
Yeah, I think if we're talking about culture, what's more cultural than flamethrowers?
Nothing.
Who among us doesn't want a flamethrower?
I don't know. I don't think I've ever met anyone who said they don't like flamethrowers.
Yeah.
It's hard to do. Flamethrowers are just so awesome.
Yeah. And then some shows that came out. Netflix, Altered Carbon came out on Netflix. I started the first two episodes of that.
Yeah, I've been seeing ads for that all over the city.
It's pretty good.
Yeah? You know, I'll have to check it out. I'm excited for Coach Snoop, personally.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever been more excited for like a reality, like celebrity reality show than Coach Snoop.
And then
just Snoop Dogg coaching high school. What could be more inspirational? Like,
yeah, it's Snoop Dogg. What a guy.
God, just the D-O-double-G, you know, holding it down.
What do you want to do next week on next week's show?
Because what do you want to do next week?
We have another week before Black Panther comes out.
We could talk about the Grammys if you want.
Yeah, we could talk
lead a little talk about the Grammys.
Okay, so next week.
I got lots to say about that.
Okay, so next week we will talk about the Grammys, and we'll, you know, they're, as people are hearing this now, they're a little more, little less than a week behind us. So, you know, we'll have a little more time to soak up the impact of the Grammys, and Michael will lead a discussion next week.
Yeah.
So that, all right, that's the plan. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in.
Yes.
Plugs, go to patreon.com/culturevacuum. Check it out. Give us some money if you want to. Don't give us some money if you don't want to. It's fine. Share the show with your friends. We're on Spotify now, both Culture Vacuum and Unwatchable. So you can say, hey, open that app everyone has and watch this show.
Yeah.
Do that.
But That's pretty much it.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Samuel_C137.
You can follow me on Twitter at What's Up Michael.
Yep. So that's it for the show this week, everybody. Bye.
Adios.